This is East Carolina All-American Brian Packard, and we're talking Pirate Baseball and the Sports Objective, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate Baseball.
Welcome into Extra Innings here on the Sports Objective, brought to you by Next Level Training Center. Our good friends Trent Breton and Gaynell Brett there on Wimbledon Drive. In fact, you can go to nextleveltc.com. Call them at 252-756-NEXT. Don't forget about their Facebook page. It's awesome. And they're fantastic folks, personally and professionally. So easy to deal with. Again, call them at 252-756-NEXT, nextleveltc.com. And we'll give a shout-out to our producer, obviously the man that does everything for the show. I call him the glue, Bubba Rosenbaum. How are you, man?
Doing well, Dave. Hope you guys are. I'm looking forward to talking Pirate baseball. Unfortunately, we didn't have any Pirate baseball this weekend, so we'll be taking a look at the big picture, how the season's going up to this point and what lies ahead for the Pirates.
No doubt about it. And I tell you what, when you have this man, I'm lucky to be on the show with this guy as much as I think of him. And he was a coach when I was East Carolina, and that was a few years ago. Dr. Gary Overton, coach, how are you?
Really good. Thanks, Dave, and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We thought tonight we were scheduled to have you on. We were talking about an away series at Houston, and I know that we'll talk about that later on. All the duties you have, for folks that don't know, probably the people that watch this podcast, watch this show and listen to you on the radio with Corey, know that you have a lot of duties outside of being the color analyst for baseball that prohibits you from going to a lot of the away games. But we thought we were going to have you on tonight to talk about a Houston series, and a series that made news because it didn't happen.
Yeah, very much. And certainly not the first one in the NCAA baseball pool this year for it to have happened. But reluctantly, we had all hoped that it would not happen. It did, and just nothing we can do about it. A team, and Coach Cliff Godwin is addressing his team, I'm sure, as we speak, about how we just move on from here, take things as they are, and one of the top teams in the country, being 26-5 at this time, and as of this minute, I see that our RPI is at number 7. You just take that and you move on, because there are a lot of teams chasing us and we want to keep it that way, I'm sure, is what Coach Godwin's saying. So, we don't have anything to talk about in regards to Houston, but we do have a lot to talk about in terms of the quality of this club and where it could go from here.
Coach, before we do just that, just tell us what you can as far as what transpired this week. I guess it was Tuesday that the report came out on Twitter from Kendall Rogers, who I believe lives in the city of Houston. And he was just talking about he heard that the East Carolina-Houston series is on the ropes. But then we got what we thought was good news at the time, that the series would be played. The Pirates travel out to Houston, only to find out that the contact tracing was worse than anticipated.
Yeah, and as we all know, almost the same things, Bubba. It's a lot of it is speculation as to when it was learned and so forth. We do know the Pirates got there. We do know the Pirates were practicing on Thursday night, as they always do. When they play a conference opponent away, they fly in, usually practice on that team's field on Thursday night. And it was either during that practice or just after that Coach Godwin and the team learned that there would be no game.
Coach, I wanted to ask you the very fact of, obviously, with the mindset of being a coach and your players, have you had, generically speaking, have you had things like this happen in the past for you? We obviously know you didn't deal with COVID, but like, were series canceled? Can you talk about being the legendary coach that you are? I know you coached so many games at East Carolina, being assistant or the head coach. What is there anything that you can relate it to?
No, not really, Dave. I mean, we all as coaches have been places where weather forecasts were one thing and the opposite occurred. And we stunningly were eliminated from a series, so to speak, due to weather. That's going to happen to anyone. But under these circumstances, no one expects it by any means. And it does come out of the just out of the realm of things, so to speak. Yet at the same time, we know what we're all going through, and we all know that there's always that possibility. So at least, although it being an unknown, we know that things like this can happen under these conditions.
Coach O, right now, for our viewers, our AAC standings are scrolling across the bottom of the screen. And I know off the air, right before we went live, Coach, you were telling us on the impact of a cancellation of a series or a postponement of a series. And so tell our viewers what you were telling Dave and I.
Yeah, well, that's in regards to the conference tournament. Good question, Bob. In the fact that what we had heard now, let's assume this is true because we have heard this from media sources and we had heard it from opposing teams. And that is that if a team is not allowed to participate in one series, that's fine. If more than one occurs that a team's not allowed to participate in, then that team would move down to the bottom of the seedings for the conference tournament only. Now, how the NCAA would look at that would only be, I'm sure, only in number of games played and, again, RPI. I'm not sure that it'll have any effect that a team was seeded sixth or seventh or whatever due to COVID issues. But from a conference end of things, we're told that a team that loses two or misses out on two series would have to go to the bottom of the standings. Now, that could be multiple teams. So how would they be seeded? How would that be placed? We don't know.
Well, I hope if that's the case, they're doing that. I would hope it would go like a tiebreaker. Like if you're saying everybody is equal and then say, well, East Carolina beat that, you know, person head to head. I hope they don't do a flip of the coin or something. I'm glad that I'm not coaching. At the level you guys have had over the years is such a stressful thing. I can't imagine, number one, but to have all these inadvertent, it's already a tough job, so to speak, when all the day-to-day operations of things, and then to have COVID thrown in there, pardon the term, but I know it's a curveball for sure. You guys.
And Dave, your point so well stated, because the NCAA makes a big point of this, and that is, that when two teams have met previously in the season, they really don't want to hear, well, this team really is better and it was a given day, and nine times out of they don't want to hear that. Their theory is that when two teams match up head to head, the result is what matters as to who will be placed higher or seated higher and so forth. And there's no better way to do that than head to head competition. So you're right, if multiple teams do fall in that category, certainly head-to-head competition would factor in.
One question I had, I know this past Monday that we turned in, well, I assume we turned in a bid to host a regional. I can't imagine that we would not. So my question to you is, I want to get your thoughts. I know why you told us pre-show why they're the May 12th, I believe it is, when they're going to make the announcement, May 11th or May 12th, they'll make the announcement of the teams a few weeks ahead of time. For people that don't know, that would normally be Memorial Day when we find out the selection show, we find out what's going to happen, if we're having hosting or not hosting, that sort of thing. But I want to get your thoughts, first of all, on the early site announcements, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, well, first of all, let me assure you that last Monday, ECU did place a bid to host the regional and super regional. Yes, and I can confirm that. For all of us, but the way it was done in the past, as we all know, it was announced on Memorial Day. You're right; the sites were actually announced the day before, the day prior to Memorial Day, and then this, not just the seedings, but the all of the placement of teams was announced on that particular day. Now, 3 weeks earlier, on May. In early May, May 10th, I think is the date that they will announce the sites of where the 16 host will be, or where the 16 sites for the tournament will be. And at the conclusion of the regionals, they will then take those winners, those 16 winners, and decide where the sites for the super regionals will be. So that's how that format will work. But why they did this was a COVID issue. It's to give the teams, the programs, and the universities ample time, who are selected, it's to give them ample time to get their to get all the protocols in place for the tournament to be played, to be hosted, and for all protocols to be followed. Very important that it be known that there was no minimum bid required this year, just that a bid was placed. So no team had to state a certain amount of money that the NCAA would make off of hosting any said regional. The NCAA, in return, has said that merit will be the primary issue as to who is selected for host sites. But there could be other reasons. My personal feeling is that geography could be one. As we all know, for a long time, the NCAA has liked to have host sites on the West Coast. They don't want to go void of areas that are really good in baseball, such as the South, which they've not had to worry about, or the Southeast. But this year with Oregon and Arizona, certainly up near the top of the RPI standings, the NCAA has to worry about that. Years and years ago, Dave, you were talking about when you were in school and when I was the coach. And just prior to that, just before that, they actually selected regionals, using that word again, regionally. And there was always one in the Northeast. There was always one in the Midwest. And that way, every region of the country had a representative. I'm not sure that it'll go back to that this year, but it will allow more opportunities to get a host possibly in an area that has not received it of late. So that's a possibility. That's what I mean by geographically. But there are other factors too. But primarily, merit is the number one, but will be the number one issue, I'm sure.
Coach, as you have, I was just going to ask a quick question, because we have a player show up late, Coach, and is he going to have to pencil roll? Is he going to have to run after practice? Or you've been a coach for many years. How do you handle a player showing up late?
Well, tardiness is no excuse. There is no excuse for tardiness on any athletic organization. So we'll have to deem the punishment as we go.
Okay. Welcome into the show, Kyle from the McGrange Bar. I'm playing with you, man. How are you?
I'm doing well, Coach. You just let me know what you need me to do, and I'll get it done.
Hey, Kyle, it's a pleasure to be on here with you, and I think we all can have fun doing this.
Absolutely. You mentioned merit and how you think maybe that they'll not necessarily go back to the old format, but keep that in mind in terms of placing teams in different regions. It looks to me on paper anyway, as we see here today, based on merit, as of right now, I would think the only other team in the Carolinas, as we see here today, that would be a position besides East Carolina to host would be South Carolina. Would you agree with that?
Totally agree. Totally. As of today, I really do, Kyle. And that's another plus. Not that ECU needs that, because based on merit, ECU's merit stands alone right now for its placement. But the fact that, yes, only one at this moment possibly is playing into the pool. There are a lot of teams in the Carolinas and Virginia that have to be placed somewhere. And so the fact that only two are in this respective area, that's a feather in ECU's cap.
No question. Coach, while we have you on tonight, we're going to talk about obviously we'll be doing that in just a little bit. A recap of your thoughts. It's a little over, I know, technically, as Bubba, I know he's a numbers guy, that we're over halfway through the season. We'll be talking about that in just a minute. I just want to get your thoughts, because we have you on. You're a guy that's been in that selection committee. You've been in the room. We have not. Can you talk about one of the things that obviously I think there's no question we're going to be hosting a regional. I think the question comes down if we'll get the national seed I think we're on the bubble for that. So what when you're in that room, what is the committee looking for? What does East Carolina have to do to get that national seed, the top eight seeds?
Well, based on your assessment, Dave, I think you have been in the room before, because that's very, very accurate. I wouldn't say that ECU's on the bubble because there's a lot of baseball to be played between now and when super regionals are aligned, so to speak. Another factor or another point to your question is that, as I said earlier, teams are not going to be placed in a region. Are not going to be placed in a super regional against an opponent and the host being decided until after all the regionals are over. So, again, how much geography plays in that, how much anything other than merit, be it conference, RPI. There are a lot of factors. And now you said one earlier, head-to-head. If there's been head-to-head competition prior to, that's going to weigh. That weighs heavily, very heavily. But at the same time, two teams that make super regionals, the first thing they'll do is they'll place the two teams. The opponents will be settled prior to the hosting situation being settled.
Coach, what happens if, and we'll use East Carolina for an example, though let's hope this doesn't happen. Let's say Greenville's awarded the host site.
Sorry, say that again, Kyle.
I said, let's hope this doesn't happen, but I'm going to use East Carolina as the example. Let's say Greenville is awarded the host site.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And then we completely fall apart. But we still make the regionals, but we're no longer a one seed. And we may be not even in a position to be a two seed. Suddenly we're a three. You know, I've seen two seeds host plenty of time. Could you host as a three, or would they ship us somewhere else and we wouldn't even be in our own regional?
Well, it's very possible to host as a non-one seed, but it's very rare now. That was a little more, and I wouldn't even use the word prevalent, but it occurred a little more years ago, particularly when, and I'll go back to something I alluded to earlier, particularly when the NCAA wanted to get a host in a certain region, and they couldn't do it with a one seed, but they could with a two. One of the years I was on the committee, UConn, University of Connecticut, hosted but was not a number one seed. They were a two. Florida State was sent to UConn because the NCAA really wanted to get a host in the Northeast region. But for that to happen at ECU would be really rare. I don't see that happening, Kyle. At the same time, after the sites are selected, after the host sites are selected, I think it would take a lot then for a team to fall enough out of being a one seed, because there's only 3 weeks left. They would have to have a really, not just a really bad tournament, but the last 2 weeks of their regular season would have to be really terrible. Could happen. But don't see that happening to ECU once the host is established. Now, if one does fall out of, say, top seeding, I don't see that team hosting a super regional. If that adds to your question.
Sure. Yeah. I just curious, you know, it's just interesting to me with, you know, still 3 weeks to go in tournament, you know, if somebody gets a host site and then they don't look like they should be a one seed anymore, how that would play out. But, and I just used East Carolina as the example. And no, I certainly didn't think it would happen to us, but you never know with some of these SEC schools, things can shift in a hurry.
Absolutely. And let's go back to your original question about, or one of your questions about ECU and South Carolina being the only teams right now, a team that's, I'm sure they put in a bid, and I'm sure they wouldn't want me to say that they're not a team to be selected, but very close to getting into the discussion with South Carolina and East Carolina is UNC Charlotte.
Oh, wow.
Very close.
Wait, but then you look at head-to-head competition with that. Thankfully,
there's no question there. But now, I don't think it would be ECU versus Charlotte. I think both teams could host.
I'm not. Okay. All right. That'd be interesting.
Yes.
Yeah, Robert Woodard's doing a tremendous job with that program. And when we played them, after seeing those guys in action and seeing them in person against App State, and seeing play another time or two online, I'm very impressed with what Coach Woodard has going on there with the 49ers, and not surprised that they're doing well.
Yeah, and Bubba, he did it in a unique way. He did it with a lot of transfers, not just junior college transfers, but graduate so-called graduate transfers, but guys that have really bought into what he's trying to do there. And they're very sound, very solid. There's no question. Although ECU swept the series, as Kyle just mentioned, you could see that was a really good club with good pitching. And, of course, when they left Greenville, they've been a different club since.
No question about it, Coach. When hopefully we'll know, I guess, very soon. But I know the Pirates if we take care of business and winning, we'll be talking about, obviously, UCF coming to town this this weekend. We can only focus on – it's like the Serenity Prayer. We can only focus – in other words, we can only focus now and control what our destiny. We can't worry about anybody else but East Carolina. I know that Cliff Godwin would say that. He has said that in the past. As far as the season is concerned, overall, we want to get your thoughts so far, and we can kind of dissect it a little bit. I know that it's like a marathon and not a sprint with 50-some games.
Oh, yeah, no question about that. But 26-5 record. And you know, really interesting. We've had an excellent year with a really good club. And if there was ever a team, the word team really describes this unit that's playing for Cliff Godwin right now. But at 26-5, we like to think, you and I and all Pirate fans, that possibly we stumbled once or twice. I'm not sure that was the case because many of the clubs we've played are really having outstanding years. And although we lost an extra inning game to Old Dominion here, that's a team that's vying for the Conference USA title. And that's a league that many of the experts are saying we might just get three teams in, but possibly four. A very good league. So maybe that wasn't a stumble, not along the way. We played outstanding baseball on a Friday night against Elon and then happened to lose a one-run game on Saturday. Those are the things that baseball is all about. Maybe those teams really had really good days that day, but are really good teams. And not so much Elon as Old Dominion, but the things that we've done along the way, so in Charlotte. Rhode Island, a good RPI club right now, who played a lot of good people close. It was even mentioned the other day that they lost an extra inning game to us, which has made them a little better. So it's been a really good season so far. And let's not forget UCF coming to town, 22-1 at home. ECU speaks for itself.
Coach, if it was mentioned before I came on the air, I apologize, but having basically now going 2 weeks in between playing ball games, I know the guys scrimmaged down in Texas Friday. Do you know if they scrimmaged today? And what does that do to your pitching staff, not playing for that many days?
Well, first of all, the scrimmage, good question, Bubba, because the scrimmage on Friday allowed two pitchers, the first starter and the second starter, to get their work in. So that'll have no effect on those guys at all. If anyone needs to throw, it will be Cooch Maynor and Tyler Smith and the bullpen. Now, instead of getting one bullpen outing, or we call it a side in coaching, instead of getting a side in on which is about 30 pitches, 30 to 35 pitches of a workout, instead of getting one in this week, each of the relievers will get in two. And I would not be surprised. Did they scrimmage today? I'm not sure, but I would not be surprised that if Tyler Smith and Cooch Maynor did not throw today, they'll probably throw in a simulated scrimmage anyway tomorrow, and then the pitchers do not miss a beat. So nothing there. As far as the position players, other than the fact that it on the plus side, it does give a little time for rest and to heal all the bumps and bruises and any type of arm stiffness or or anything like that. But on the downside, players who are really performing well, who have gotten into somewhat of a groove or a little bit of a role, sometimes it takes a couple of games to get back into that. So that's the only possibility I could see on the negative side. Now, obviously, a guy like Lane Hoover would tell all of us, he'd say, "Hey, guys, I've been out for a long time. I don't want to miss anything. I'm ready to play now." And he wants as much time as he can get. There's a few pluses as well as the downside of this team being on a roll and maybe a couple of good hitters getting back into the groove after a couple of games.
Coach, that very question.
I want to follow up to the situation down in Houston. Do you know, this is kind of a, you could come up again, let's hope not, but do you know if Houston would have canceled early enough in the week, let's say on Monday, with COVID protocol, do you know if the conference would have allowed us to schedule a non-conference opponent if we could have found one this weekend?
You know, if I say, I'm sure I'll have the wrong answer, Bubba, but my thought would have been yes, that we could have played simply because it was on the weekend. The theory in not playing, matter of fact, I want to say it wasn't so much non-conference as that we couldn't play midweek games. And that was because we were playing four on the weekend and it would create fairness throughout the league. So if that was the case, my thought would be that, yes, we could have played on the weekend, but I don't know that for sure. I can't say that 100%. But my understanding, it was midweek games, not non-conference games that we couldn't play, but midweek games we couldn't play.
You were talking about about players that obviously – it's like the same thing when we had that silly rain delay that you can't help a few years ago in a regional, but with South Carolina. But anyway, we're off-flight game busters. You have that, and it just messes up. This is a totally different situation with time, a lot of time off. But somebody like a Golden Spikes nominee – like a Connor Norby comes to mind. When you were talking about that, that's the first person I thought about. I've got to ask Coach about, will that hurt him at all?
No, none whatsoever, Dave. And the first thing that I'm going to mention really means nothing to him or anyone else, and that's his .442 batting average. He's just had a really great year. But what he's also done, and I think this is where your question goes, what he's also done is he has gone from being not an unknown, but just ECU second baseman to a guy now that's expected to go in the top five rounds of the draft. So how much will that would this layoff hurt a guy like that? I don't think any at all. There's several things that that his swing constitutes. A 400 plus batting average on this particular level. He takes a direct path to the ball, very little wasted motion. And that's not something that you're going to lose by virtue of losing a weekend season. If we were to not play for 3 weeks, then maybe that's the case. But for right now, he's a guy like him will be very good.
One of my questions, speaking of, we're talking about the selection process. I know that we're 26-5. There's 20 games left of the conference season with the AAC. No chance, obviously. I don't think there's any way. Number one, I've got two questions. Number one, there's no way we make up that Houston series. It doesn't look like, to be fair, there's no way you can do midway games, early games in the week. There's no way that you can do it because as soon as the regular season's over, you have the conference tournament. And then you have regionals and super regionals. That's maybe I answered my own question. But the second part is, how many wins is there a certain wins total when you're in the selection committee that you say that team has 45 wins or that team has 40 wins to get a regional or host a regional? Is there something like that?
Well, we will not make up the Houston series. You're right about that. But as far as a number of wins, no, the committee doesn't look at that in any way, shape, or form, except through the eyes of RPI. For instance, there's always been a magic number, and that was 40. But inside of 40, teams with higher RPIs with 35, 37 wins, that was good enough. The RPI meaning more than that number of wins. Now, Dave, to answer your question, in this particular year, and with the understanding that teams are going to be missing series, as ECU has just done with Houston, there's going to be no number, especially number of wins, not at all. And it's going to be no winning percentage either. But it will be interesting how they and the committee has already, or the NCAA has already said that they're going to have to look at some things differently, a little differently. And it'll be very interesting to see how they what they do with high RPI clubs that are really record-wise and conference-wise. Maybe they just played a tough non-conference schedule and wasn't all that successful against it. How they view things like that, we'll see. Number of wins, though, no certain number. It used to be 40, but this year, all of that's out the window.
Coach, with the Knights coming into town this coming up weekend, we move on to those guys. I believe they took 3 of 4 from South Florida this weekend. Talk about UCF, their pitching staff, and what we need to look for from those guys.
Well, first of all, when it comes to UCF this year, that's really a hard one to put their finger on. They have been up and down per game, up and down for the year. Bubba, you go back in March, early March, and they win 2 out of 3 games at Ole Miss when Ole Miss was number one. And, of course, Ole Miss now inside the top 10. But at the same time, they're struggling a little bit at times within the league, and they'll show flashes of brilliance. Extra inning game, which they lost and really had the game in control at Florida State. But they've had some really good wins. So this is a club that's going to come in talented. There were some who predicted that UCF would be the team to beat in the conference along with East Carolina. But UCF just hasn't lived up to that. And it's like when they get a couple of wins behind them that seem to get them on a roll, they'll stumble in another way. So which team will come into Greenville? We'll see. We just know it's a talented team.
Yeah, you're talking about the Knights. The Knights took 3 out of 4 from USF this weekend. That was their second meeting already in that I-4 showdown. They had split their 4 games here a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and that they're a club that is kind of, I guess if you could describe it this way, ECU, Tulane now, after a good weekend against Wichita State, and Wichita State seem to be the 3 teams at the top. And then, of course, Cincinnati and Memphis and USF have separated themselves to the point where they probably cannot catch up. I won't say they can't, but I did. But they won't, I don't think. But UCF seems to be the team in the middle, could go in either direction. And that's going to be very interesting to follow. I think when they leave Greensboro next Sunday, they'll know which direction they're going.
And let's hope it's south, nothing against the Knights.
Directionally and as far as the conference is concerned. And Coach, our good buddy Alan Vick says, always great to see Coach O. What a class act in every way.
And thanks to you guys, but thanks to Alan as well.
No doubt about it. Coach, with we're talking about the series this weekend, with UCF, and you were talking about the great record for the Pirates. That's got to bode well for the Pirates coming up. I know anything can happen. I know the coach and you're saying, Dave, there's a lot of baseball. But for so far, we're talking about the first half of the season, a little bit over the second half of the season. They have been really, really – only losing one game is phenomenal in a baseball season at home so far.
Yeah, and in addition to that, I think it should be pointed out that although Connor Norby seems to be the catalyst for the offense, I think we all would say that, but it just seems to be different guys every day. When you look at the middle of the lineup and you see Thomas Francisco and you see Moylan, Cadell, those guys in there, those guys seem to be producing on a frequent basis, but when one – doesn't have a great day. It seems like two others do. Now, Bryson Wuerl, a guy that's really come on last couple of weeks or weekends. He was the American Player of the Week just last week. And we all know what kind of talent he has. We were talking about Norby being inside a fifth-round draft. And there's Bryson, who certainly possesses all the tools to be at least that high.
Coach, a couple of
things.
Go ahead, Bubba.
Quick. A couple things, Coach. You brought up that name, Josh Moylan, big freshman first baseman. And what a job he's done, hitting the ball well to all fields. And we talked last week with Corey about how Josh, one of those games against Memphis, he had struck out three times. I think it was the Sunday game. And after striking out three times, he got the game-winning hit.
And when that happens, Bubba, you're seeing a guy with a veteran mentality. He may be a freshman on the field. He may be a freshman in the classroom, but he's a veteran now, or he's matured, so to speak, as a baseball player. You put those first three at-bats behind you. That's something that's so hard for a coach to instill in a player. Those three are gone. They're behind you. You're not going to get those back, and you don't want them back. It's the next at bat. You're as good as the next at bat, and that's what Josh Moylan showed in that series. But he's also, as you said, a guy that hits to all fields. I think that's been a part of his offensive prowess that Coach Godwin has really instilled. Once you go to the backside, anybody can pull the ball, and it's going to make it that much easier. And that's something Francisco was stressing as well early in the year. He was really working on going the other way, and in so doing, all of a sudden he started getting pitches in to the pool side and with power.
Coach, I had a question, a sidebar. You were talking about the draft. I know this is a very unusual year because we've had COVID-19. Some players came back because there was a limited draft and all that. How many players do you think off the top of your head that would be will be drafted this year? It seems like it's going to be a huge number for us this year.
Well, that certainly is a possibility, Dave. You're exactly right. I'm not going to say a certain number, but I would feel pretty confident. I think you and I, if we were talking to scouts right now, we would feel pretty confident to say that there would be anywhere from, I'll say, 5 to 6 players that are certainly being discussed on a daily basis. Yeah.
Wow. A good year for the Pirates, and certainly their stock value. And, of course, master of the obvious here, but common sense will tell you that the deeper we go into the tournament, the better their draft status, right?
And this is another hard thing for coaches to explain to players. The better the team, and the higher that team goes, you said the better in our conference tournament, but or you may have said the NCAA. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, but, yeah, the further a team goes – and the better that club is, the more acknowledgement a player is going to get for the draft. There's no question about that.
And kind of speaking of that, the amount of players that are going to be drafted off this baseball team. Coach, you've been around East Carolina baseball for a long time. As a coach, you're a broadcaster, what have you. Have you ever seen a team? I know COVID has something to do with it, but have you ever seen a team with this much depth throughout? I mean, from position players to pitching. I mean, we've had a lot of good teams. I don't know if I've seen a team with this much depth.
And Kyle, that's a question I get asked a lot is, what's the difference in baseball now and say 10 years ago, 20, 30, and so forth. But that is without doubt the most profound, is that there's more depth on clubs now. But for this ECU club, yes. I'll answer your question straight up and just say, never seen one with this much, especially on the pitching staff. There are a lot of arms that the Pirates can go to on this staff and be very successful.
That leads me to my next. I follow up to that, Dave. How many other teams, you know, well, obviously with COVID, a lot of guys that players come back. Do you know how many teams nationally has similar pitching depth this year, or are we really unique in that situation?
I wouldn't say that we're unique, but we are in a different class. There's no question about that. There are a handful of clubs that do have extraordinary pitching depth. We happen to be one of them. I do think that most all teams have a run of depth in with position players. It's a little hard to find holes in lineups this year. There's better offense than I think, but on pitching staffs, I've heard of, I'll put it this way, Kyle. I've heard of three or four that are like ECU. I've not heard of many that are in that class, though.
That was one of the questions I had for you, Coach, is that you've been around the game a long time at ECU, is the not only the depth, but it seems like to me, and maybe you can help me out because you're a historian of ECU baseball as well, as far as the depth, particularly at the bullpen, just seems to be outrageous. Some people would say the kids of today would say it's sick, but it's so good, Coach, that it's scary.
It really is, Dave. C.J. Mayhew not only has logged quality innings, but quantity as well. He's gone out there and been successful each time out. And what a way to start with your bullpen there. We know about guys like Matt Bridges and Cam Colmore, and they've been good all year. Matt Bridges has been good since his freshman year. So there's three guys in the back end of the bullpen right there. That's three. In addition, you have guys like Saylor, Nick Logish, who has a really good arm, high number of strikeouts. And when you focus on some of the stats of some of these guys, like strikeouts to innings pitched, that in itself is a little bit scary. We've thrown a few names out there, not to mention three or four young guys who have produced as they have come out as well. So that's the back end of the bullpen. Now, we haven't talked about the four starters, Gavin Williams, Wisden Hunt, who both have been stellar most of the year, and Cooch Maynard, which we know about him, and Tyler Smith, who is very steady. So now you're referring to probably, Dave, 10 to 11 arms that a coach can go to and in some way, shape, and form feel comfortable. That is scary.
Yeah, no doubt. I was going to ask you when Coach Dietrich was talking about, and I know that Coach Godwin talks that we made such an emphasis on the four-game series for the conference schedule, but it really is unique and set up, as we've talked about on the show numerous times on Extra Innings and on a regular show, the Sports Objective itself, the very fact that it's set up like a regional, right, Coach, or, you know, like a super regional. So it's basically – each weekend is kind of like a regional for East Carolina, in my opinion.
Very good. A super regional is set up like a weekend conference series. Used to be three games. Sometimes you would only play two. In more cases, it was three. But a regional, you're exactly right. This particular staff is set up more like regional play and like a four-game conference series play, because you're going to need multiple arms during the course of that week. Pitchers are not going to give you complete games all four games. That's just not going to happen. So when you go to the bullpen, how you go to it, and in what roles you use certain players will dictate how you perform on that weekend. And the Pirates have been very successful with it so far.
Coach, I'm going to ask you a question that Cliff would probably kill me for asking. And you might not even like the question as a coach. And it's a fan question, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
It's okay.
So, all right. Let's
embrace the sitting down.
Let's just say the perfect storm happens and Pirates make it to Omaha.
Okay.
And let's say, you know, with this pitching staff, like you said, it's elite. Let's say somehow we win the whole thing. East Carolina is national champions. Okay. What would it mean to you personally?
Oh, the fact that ECU has never been to Omaha, getting there would mean a lot. And to people like myself, Cliff Godwin, and those 40 young men, it's not going to be enough. To win it all, I'll just put it this way, Bubba, it would be the highest of highs for any ECU baseball person. past and present.
Yeah. I know that those folks back in the, like Earl Boykin back in the 60s, I know they won a title back, a national championship back in the NAIA. But obviously in the modern era, this is something that there's no question, and it's only a matter of time with Cliff and with this program that we're going to Omaha.
You know, going back to Earl Boykin's 61 team and that national championship, Bubba, I'm going to feed off of your question, and all ECU baseball personnel for all these years have hung our hat on the 61 national championship team. To put a second one as a national champion wouldn't be remarkable. It would be, it would be euphoric, I think would be the word for all of us, including Earl Boykin, myself, and you three guys as well.
Hey, yeah. Coach, would you, if we win the national championship, do you put the season tickets on sale the next day? A whole bunch of people buying season tickets.
That's a good idea, Dave, actually.
No, we would relish the national title first and then do okay. That.
Okay. I'm trying to make more season tickets.
Coach O, you actually answered it a lot better than I thought you would. I thought you were going to give me the old coach speak. We can't think about that right now. We got to look at what's in front of us. So I love your answer. I'm glad you were candid with it.
Well, Kyle, let me add to that too. Cliff Godwin, Keith LeClair. Guys like that, they brought Omaha into the fold. And the talk of going to Omaha to the players, I think Keith used to say that it's mentioned every day in his locker room. And so, that was the first thing that came to mind before I answered the question. And I didn't want to say, let's take care of business first. I want all of us to think like ECU baseball is that the ultimate prize is what we're all trying to achieve.
Yeah, and Coach, is something that's been consistent with East Carolina. As people that asked me, as obviously a huge cheerleader for my school, but the very fact that our baseball program has been so consistent over the years. And you know, the only word that I can think of with a there's a certain level, the expectations, and also there's a swagger, whether it's a coach, I don't know if it's like understood or what, I don't know from your perspective, but there's like a swagger when you know that East Carolina baseball has been successful for so long, that the fans have an expectation, and now they know that it's not like climbing Mount Everest. Sure, you can climb at Mount Everest, but it's extremely difficult. I think Pirate Nation knows that it's, not as difficult as climbing Mount Everest to get to Omaha.
At the same time, you mentioned fan expectation and coach expectation, but the players, what tradition does for you and what the history of winning does for you is that you expect to win. The players feel an expectation among themselves to win, and it carries over through the season. The old saying is, there'll be games during the season that you're not expected to win. You will win because you expect them to win or you expect to win. I'm sorry. So you're right. It's not as hard as climbing Mount Everest. And we all know it's going to happen at some point. At some point, it will happen. But history and tradition has a lot to do with that as well.
No question. As far as you were talking about pitching is concerned, and is there a certain amount as a coach? I've always wanted to ask you this because I know Coach Godwin won't tell us, but is there a certain amount of pitchers? I mean, how many pitchers do you really need? I know that I hate to put a certain number on it, but is there a certain one in your mind knowing that, hey, we've got this year, we're really good. We have X amount of pitchers between the bullpen, and we obviously know how many starters we're going to have, but as far as across the board, is there a number you're looking for? You say, we're going to be pretty darn good this year.
No, Dave, because every year is different. And Coach Speak would say, you never have enough. You never have enough good ones. But as far as setting a number, I don't think so. Not by any means, but a four-game series. And sometimes when you have, which this year we don't have midweek games after the conference began, but sometimes when you're loaded with midweek games and especially tough opponents, then you might, as a coach, put a number on it. I just don't see that number. I think it varies from year to year.
Okay.
Now, Coach, looking nationally, this weekend you had a top five series taking place over in Knoxville, Vanderbilt, and University of Tennessee. Vanderbilt, obviously you have two tremendous starters in Rocker and also Leiter. So just talk about some of the things, you know, you've seen out of those ball clubs and just other teams around the nation that are going to be legitimate national championship contenders.
Yeah, and Vanderbilt did win two of those games, but only Rocker was a winner in that one. Leiter was defeated yesterday on in the middle game. So, and that's two very good clubs, two really good clubs. Vanderbilt, especially with its strength in pitching. But you mentioned other clubs along the way. This SEC does possess quite a few, as they always do. Arkansas is really good. Mississippi State and Ole Miss are really good. Alabama seems to be creeping up. South Carolina has one of its best clubs probably since the national title clubs. And then out west, I think I mentioned Arizona and Oregon a little bit earlier, but Texas, TCU, and Texas Tech are right in that mix as well. So I think that's a pretty strong contingent. Also, it's really good, and I think all three of you guys would agree with me. It's good to see names at the top that we haven't seen in a while. Notre Dame is up there. Pittsburgh is up there. I know at one time Boston College had a good start, but they've faltered since. But it's been really good to see clubs, not just in different regions of the country, but maybe teams that haven't been national powers as such and now making a lot of noise. And that's particularly true for Pittsburgh.
Are you surprised to see Pittsburgh and Notre Dame doing so well in ACC play against Southern schools?
Not really. We all know Link Jarrett. He was an assistant at ECU, really good coach, and recruits well. And that's what he's done. He's brought good players in there and good club there. Mike Bell, who was an assistant, he was the pitching coach at Florida State and a really good one, took over the Pittsburgh club. And so he knew the ACC well when he came into Pittsburgh. But that's two clubs that Pittsburgh may be a little more of a surprise than Notre Dame, but still both were expected to be pretty good.
Another one I want to mention is ranked in the top 25, played for a national championship a couple years ago. Last time, I guess we had a full season, and that is Eric Backich. He and Nick Schnabel up in Ann Arbor, the Wolverines and the Big Ten as a whole, they're playing a conference only schedule. And I saw this weekend that they had a lot of success, and they're 18-7 right now, ranked 25th by D1 Baseball.
You know, very good point, Bubba. Michigan, Ohio State, you could even throw Indiana in there. Of course, Notre Dame is an ACC club, but the other three Big Ten clubs, but from that area of the country, what they're proving is that good baseball can be played in cold weather. And that's led by Michigan. You're right. Runner-ups at the College World Series. And after winning the first game of the best two out of three at the end of the championship. So a really good Michigan club. And good program.
No question, Coach. As far as are there any teams we're talking about across the country? You're talking about surprises, but I know that Kyle always likes to bring up our friends to the south at Coastal Carolina winning it all. We're talking about Omaha. Are there teams like that that you see right now that maybe they're not the brand names? And that are not part of the big schools like Michigan. We were just talking about Pittsburgh, Notre Dame, but are there schools out there that are under the radar maybe that we don't know about?
Well, you know, you take that Coastal club, Kyle, very veteran club, senior-laden team, and they were good all year, but they were better at the end of the year, and their veteran leadership kind of took over. not sure that we would know who any of those clubs are until the season wears on, but possibilities of I don't see an Old Dominion or a Charlotte making a run like that, but there are a handful of teams in that category. I don't see them winning the national title, but at the same time could go far. So we'll keep our fingers crossed, because what Coastal did that year was excellent for college baseball.
Coach, speaking of teams winning it all, yeah, I brought this one up the other day a few years back. Have you ever seen anything as strange as that Fresno State team that won it all? Who, if I remember right, had to win the Mountain West tournament to even make it into the regionals. You know, they really weren't very good before. I don't really know that they've been very good since. And just in the middle of it all, win the national championship. It was really strange to me.
Hadn't seen anything like that before or since, Kyle. But at the same time, you're exactly right. That was just a case of a team that caught fire. And after winning the conference tournament and getting into the NCAAs, it was just a team that they got better and better game after game. I think they beat Georgia in the College World Series final.
Yeah, that's right. And it was
The battle of the Bulldogs.
That's right.
Coach, we had a question from Shell Powell. Obviously, AMAC, Alec Makarevich, what a season he's having. He had that two-run bomb against North Carolina that was so electrifying in the eighth inning. But just talk about AMAC and where you see him going, you know, with his work ethic that's been so well documented by Cliff Godwin and the way he swings the bat from both sides of the plate. And he's so versatile in the field as well.
Well, what's more important to me, Bubba, is that when I mentioned Cadell and Moylan, Francisco, and, of course, Norby, I didn't mention AMAC, and I did not mean to leave him out, because he's a big part of the heart of that order. And he's hit anywhere from second in the order down to sixth. But when you think about the middle and the punch that he gives you, switch hitter, you're exactly right. His work ethic is what the coaches talk about all the time. They say that when they see AMAC have a good game, it isn't so pleasing to them just for the sake of that game or the team, but it's because of how hard he's worked throughout practice. They say his work ethic is unmatched on this club. And when I say he's a switch hitter, and yes, he's posting numbers and he's hitting home runs, a lot of power and power to both sides, but he's a clutch player. And that's what a coach looks for, is a guy that gets it done when you are up 3-2 or down 3-2, not when you're up 15-0, because those, what's the old saying, anyone can hit or perform in those circumstances. But no, AMAC also, we mentioned Bryson Wuerl earlier, but AMAC also player of the week in the American Conference just a few weeks back, and well-deserved. But he a big part of that core.
Coach, how about the very fact that one thing, we were talking about depth, but one of the things that's cool for me, as you see it a little bit with every baseball team, but what's really cool about Cliff Godwin's teams is what I call two-way U. I mean, he's bringing all these guys that play multiple positions, and you talk about AMAC, but there's so many guys that it keeps me on my toes, because, you know, you're so used to seeing like a certain player in right field, or he's a pitcher, or he's playing in the infield, whatever. And all of a sudden, these guys are shuffled around. Like I'm like, Cliff Godwin is keeping me honest when I'm watching the ball game.
Yeah, and like you mean when Ryder Giles comes in to close games. Absolutely. But and that remains the case through their career, with one exception. If a player appears to be exceptional in one way or the other, let's take Carson Wisenant. He came in as a two-way player. He played a little first base even last year, I think. But he came in as a two-way player, and now he looks to be very special or elite on the mound, and a left-hander who runs the fastball up pretty well, and a really good change breaking ball to go along with it. But and he just a freshman eligibility-wise, second year in school. But only in situations like that would a guy not be given the chance to play both sides. And I think that's what attracts good players for Cliff Godwin, is that he tells them, this is two-way U. You're going to have chances on both sides. And you look at – I asked you about Giles, Dave, but you look at him, and he's a perfect example because what more can you get? Be a frontline shortstop and a relief pitcher. But several of these players have that opportunity.
I want to ask you a question. Is it required on this year's team to have a mullet? Is that one of when coaches recruiting these players, their hair's a lot longer this year?
I don't know if it's required, but I know this. It sure seems to be. There seems to be a little direction of that in all of baseball, does it not?
No doubt. It's a style. It doesn't bother me a bit. I just thought it was it's one of
Dave,
the, I guess. The
Dave, are you sure it doesn't bother you?
It doesn't bother me a bit.
I mean, you are follically challenged.
I am, but that's it's just an observation I made this year that really has nothing to do with baseball. I don't care. As long as they win and they're doing good in the classroom and they're good citizens, that's all I care about. Do you have anything for Coach before we let him go, Kyle?
I know, just looking forward to getting back on the diamond this weekend and playing the Knights, and hopefully we keep right on rolling. I mean, I keep saying, you know, you can't expect to win four games every weekend, but maybe you can.
You know, Kyle, inside 10 for the RPI, and we've been there for a while, and I think that's the goal, is to stay right there, stay inside that mark. But you're exactly right. The way we've been playing, and again, it's been team baseball, which is what's so important. And what I like, too, is that when you don't really ask players to be role players, but when they fulfill roles, it makes the club that much better. ECU has a lot of that going for it right now as well. Also looking forward to getting back on the field.
Coaches, I want to say one more thing for me is thank you for all that you do for East Carolina. You have a thankless job in what you do with operations, and I appreciate all that you do for us. I know that people don't know folks like yourself behind the scenes. I know they see you obviously with us on our show, and they hear you with Corey. You do an excellent job, but thank you for everything that you do for East Carolina University. It means a lot to me and a lot of Pirate Nation.
Well, Dave, I appreciate that very much, and I appreciate working with you guys, because it's a joy being around fellow athletics people. And you guys take to the public so many good things. And thank you so much for what you do as well.
Thank you, Coach.
Yeah, appreciate it, Coach. And we look forward to having you on here in a couple weeks after that big series at Wichita State.
That'll be very interesting. Yeah,
no doubt. Thank you, Coach. Have a great night. Good week, and go Pirates.
Dave, same here. Bubba, Kyle, thanks so much.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Coach.
Dr. Gary Overton, we appreciate Coach very much for all that he does, and for coming on and being a part of Extra Innings. I want to remind you, it's brought to you by Next Level Training Center and nextleveltc.com. You can give them a call at 252-756-NEXT, 252-756-NEXT. Those folks are fantastic, with Trent and Gainell Brett, all the great people they have there, all the great staff. They're wonderful people, and their Facebook page is awesome. If you get a chance, like their Facebook page. And, guys, we got a lot to talk about in a short amount of time. Where do you want to go? I guess you want to go with HV3 first?
Yeah, Dave, let's start off with HV3. What a weekend HV3 had, you know, down in Hilton Head. Won a little over $630,000, finishing tied for second, 15 under par, four shot. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah. I was laughing at the amount of money he made.
Gotcha. Yeah. Not a bad payday, but yeah, $631,000, right at 632 to be exact. And, you know, HV3 shot 15 under, four shots off the lead. Stuart Sink was your champion at 19 under, but Harold went 66, 68, 69, and 66 down in Hilton Head at Harbor Town. So, tremendous payday, and great to see Harold playing so well, currently ranked 139th in the world. And I know he's going to get that elusive first win here soon, hopefully.
With that kind of payday, I'm going to go ahead and reward him with the PGX Club's Player of the Week.
I was going to give you the PGX Pitcher of the Week. You still month under there. So we'll give Player of the Week to HV3. Kyle gets the Pitcher of the Week for PGX Pitcher of the Week. Guys, by the way, let me go ahead and put this on.
Can I be the Player of the Week?
Yeah, you can definitely be the Player. Don't hate the player. this is my hat here for those watching here or maybe online. Or that is from pgxgloves.com. I got it in the mail today, guys. So very happy to have that.
Now,
thanks
now,
to Kaz.
Dave, mail doesn't run on Sunday.
Well, actually, it does. Not with the regular mail, but we do have Amazon now, so it does. There is a mail.
Amazon ran on Sunday.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, it's a nice looking hat.
Yeah, Stacy received an Amazon package just a few hours ago as well.
That was solid, Bubba.
Oh man, she's gonna kill you, Kyle. But anyway, I'm glad. anyway, pgxgloves.com. Go there, and Kyle, they've got a lot of great swag, like this hat that I have on. I know that you're big into hats. You're bigger than I am on that.
Yeah, and I have a big noggin, and that's a snapback.
That's not what I was. That's not where I was going with it. But.
Well, I do have a big noggin, but yeah, I love hats. I have a lot of hats, and if you need yourself a hat, if you like Dave's hat, go to pgxgloves.com and get you one. Don't forget, also, guys, they got those Welcome to the Jungle hoodies for all the baseball fans out there. Obviously, if you're watching this show, you're a Pirate baseball fan. Get you a super slick looking Welcome to the Jungle hoodie, and of course, for all your kids playing little league, get you know, and playing softball. Baseball, softball, etc. Get yourself some custom gloves. Golfers out there, get yourself some gloves. PGXGloves.com has all that, and use code ECU. Save yourself some money at checkout.
That's right. You get a great discount, and I love Kaz for all he's doing for us, and certainly my kids love him because they're sporting those youth gloves and the personalized gloves for both Alexander and Mackenzie. She has the Eye of the Tiger is the one she picked out. That's one of her favorite songs, guys, by the way, for circa 1982. But she loves those gloves. And guys, we love football and ECU.
And we
love it a lot. I know this is a baseball show, but there will be. Let's not play semantics. Let's not play semantics.
I think we gotta play semantics.
Okay. There will be a game on Saturday, whatever you want to scrimmage game, whatever you want to call it. Purple Gold Spring Game
unofficial,
will be on.
Unofficial Purple Gold Spring Game.
Yes, there's no bells and whistles. There's no cook-off. There's no events around it. It's just going to be a straight-up scrimmage, if you want to call it. It's open to the public at 1 p.m.
Yeah, I don't even think they're not going to have a hit count, no tickets. I don't think there's going to be any concessions open.
No.
Bare bones. But according to Coach Houston, he has stated it twice now, 94.3 The Game on Patrick Johnson's show Wednesday, post-practice Saturday to all the media. The scrimmage next Saturday is open to the public, 1 p.m., unofficial spring game. So come on out, grab yourself a seat, let's practice social distancing, and watch the Pirates play some football. It's your first chance to be in that stadium in a while. Again, the administration, you know, called off the spring game. But it appears Coach Houston has worked something out where we can have a unofficial spring game, a scrimmage, and Pirate Nation is welcome to come and sit out there in the sunshine and watch the Pirates play, man. You just think about that. Just what better place to be on a Saturday afternoon than in Dowdy Fickell Stadium watching the Pirates play?
And let me say this: if you're trying to sell season tickets and you're a part of the administration, then have people there to sell season tickets.
Well,
I'm going to do mine this week. I haven't renewed mine yet, but I will this week.
Yeah, well, mine were taken care of a while back. But, you know, how about this? This is me spitballing, if you will.
Okay, bro, Dusty.
If you have been through what the Pirate Nation has been through with Scotty Montgomery, with Jeff Conklin, and you lost a lot of fans. And then all Americans, everybody around the world has been through COVID-19.
Yep.
So you have a disengaged fan base. You have a fan base right now that you need to engage. You need to reach out to them. You need to get them involved if you want to sell season tickets. If you want to get that Pirate Club donation, you need to do everything you can to get them involved, to get them excited, and get them ready for Pirate football. And I can't think of a better way than to have a spring football game, than to have a cook-off, than to have events, than to get everybody back out there. People are dying for something to do.
And look, I remember back in the Mo days when people were talking about back in those Saturdays when they normally would be going to a football game. And guess what they said to me, Kyle? You know, there's a lot of stuff I need to do around the house.
Oh, there's a lot of things. Yeah.
There's a lot of, you know, I haven't been hunting in a long time. So guess what? You want to talk about everybody wants to talk about the deficits we have. If we don't engage our fan base, guess what? There's more than, I mean, I'm not saying this is me.
You're just digging the hole deeper. You're just digging it deeper. If you don't get our fan base back involved, as soon as they can, and a lot of people say winning will solve all that, and it will. And it will, but you know what? You can watch them win on TV. You need to get these fans. We need to get our fan base. You know, you ain't got to worry about Kyle and Bubba and Dave and Pirate Al and Whitey Martin so on and so forth. There are guys that are always going to be there. You got your diehards, but there's a lot of people out there, man. There's a lot of people that have lost interest. And right now, as we sit here in April, there ain't a lot going on still. You still ain't got a lot of concerts going on. You still ain't got a lot of festivals going on. We're just now starting to get back to normal. And having a spring football game to go to, if people do care about it, if anybody thinks nobody cares if there's a spring football game or not, I really believe, you know, had we done this right, had we really pumped this up, and made it what it used to be, I think we could have, you know, if they only wanted to allow 10,000 people in there, I think we could have packed that place out. But as it is, you know, Coach Houston, I don't know, you know, what's happened, how he's managed to get this done where we can at least have some people in there and it can be a scrimmage open to the public. But as we sit here on Sunday night, I don't even know the day's date, guys. What is it, the 18th?
Yeah.
Good. So as we see here Sunday night, we are open to the public for the scrimmage Saturday at 1 p.m. at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium, and everybody come on out, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens between now and Saturday.
All right. Well, we're getting ready to wrap up our show. Appreciate everybody.
Bobby, you got anything to say?
Crickets. So,
Bubba's all right.
Well, we're going to have a great week. UCF's in town. If you go to Saturday, you do. You don't, you don't. But we're going to have a great week. I promise everybody. Extra Innings is brought to you by Next Level Training Center. And I appreciate Trent, Gaynell, everybody there. Thanks to Kaz, Mark Manikazi. I appreciate Kaz very much for PGXGloves.com for his sponsorship of the Player of the Week and the pitcher of the week as well. All right, guys, do you have anything before we go? We'll talk about, we got the games coming up. Thank you, Bubba, putting that off the screen for me this weekend for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And that'll be ESPN Plus, ECUPirates.com for the fourth game. And those games will be, let's see, 1, 4, and noon. A doubleheader on Friday. Well, game two will be on 5:30. But then on Saturday at 4 and Sunday at noon at Clark LeClaire Stadium. And if not, guys, I've had a great time. Thanks to Dr. Gary Overton for coming on the show. And thanks for Kyle Barber, Bubba Rosenbaum, producing on air as well. And you've been watching, listening to the Sports Objective Extra Innings right here. Good night, everybody. Go Pirates.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night. We will once again talk East Carolina Pirate baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!